as an independent body. Well, it's in a different office than the police department. I suppose that qualifies then as being independent. It's not police officers, although there was an ex-police officer appointed to the board. What we had meant by independent, and that was very clear, and was wanted by the people of Santa Cruz, and the thousands of people that signed petitions and pushed for this review board for years. What everyone wanted was a board that would investigate every complaint of police misconduct that was filed in the city of Santa Cruz. The police review board that was created does not do that. It falls short of that.
Well, I know that you filed a complaint yourself that wasn't investigated.
Yeah, although the police chief says it was investigated, even though his letter to me says that my complaint didn't fall within the time frame for it to be investigated. At the end of his letter, he says that he made a finding in it, in the complaint, which implies that he investigated, but I think, you know, that people weren't interviewed. I was not interviewed.
This is a complaint against the sergeant, Joe Clark, Steve Clark.
Yeah. Sorry.
And when he went in essence, because he was engaging in intimidation with respect to essentially what's supposed to be an independent board member.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this police officer told me he had a file on me, that he had been investigating me, meaning my political work as a member of the police review board. That he had overheard or had heard from people who had overheard conversations I had had about the police and police misconduct, and he had done this investigation of me while on duty, being paid by taxpayers to fight crime in the city of Santa Cruz, and he said that he had information about me that would embarrass me, maybe, and that he would not tell me what it was, and that he was going to save it for later. And he told me that to my face, directly. And I ended up filing a complaint about that, and the police chief said, you filed your complaint too late. I filed it about 7 months after the incident, and...
And the reason you filed it late, was it not, was because the chair of the board kept urging you not to embarrass the police department by filing it?
Well, unfortunately, if I were to do it again, I would have filed the complaint immediately that day. I would have done that. Kay Bowden, who was the chairperson of the board at the time, was the only person to witness that meeting with Steve Clark, and she was not an ally after that, and her recommendation to me was to forget about it, and that if I didn't, her comment to me right after that meeting was, do you have anything to hide? And I said no, and she said, then you have nothing to worry about. That wasn't what was important to me. What was important was that a police officer had attempted to intimidate me in my political work as a member of the government-appointed police review board that oversees his department.
Well, it's ironic that she would say something like that, because that's what the police department says when they want to search your car without a warrant.
Yeah.
Or they want to search your person. They say, do you have something
right.
to hide? Now, the reason for the Constitution is that you have the right to privacy.
Right.
And when people begin to imperil your privacy, especially an organization like a powerful police force, that is a very dangerous and serious matter. And when they do so, and it has a political dimension because you're a known critic of certain abuses of the police department, then it really comes clearly into focus, I think, what's going on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and it was incredible. You know, I was frustrated. I didn't know what to do. What happened was, as I told you before, I had agreed to keep this meeting with this police officer confidential. He asked for that agreement at the beginning of the meeting. And I didn't know he was going to attempt to threaten me. I didn't know he was going to do anything at all except actually address the issues I had brought to this meeting, which was that he had been disrespectful towards me in public. And he actually agreed that he had been and wouldn't do it again. He then said he had some things he wanted to tell me, which was that he had been investigating me and had a file on me. I really thought I could not break this confidentiality I had agreed to. In the end, I decided that I had agreed to confidentiality of a meeting about this topic I had asked him to meet about, not about him intimidating me. And in fact, then I did make it public what happened. And in the meantime, I tried to figure out some other remedy, like suing him in a court of law. And no attorney was willing to help me with that because, unfortunately, in our society, you need a lot of evidence, and preferably visual, to prosecute a police officer for brutality or misconduct in this case.
Well, do you think then that if you subpoenaed Kay Bowden, she would have lied about the matter on the stand?
I don't know. Her leaning was definitely to meet the needs of the police and not to meet the needs of citizens. She really felt strongly that the ends justify the means and that we needed to keep a so-called positive relationship with the police now, meaning in 1994, so that down the road we could make real changes. Mm-hmm. In other words, let's let some things get by now and not upset the police, and down the road we can really have some effect. And in fact, that's why I quit the board. There were a number of occasions when Kay led the opinion on the board and others followed, that some information that we are going to give to the police department, some critical information, some recommendations about how they should change what they're doing, should still be given to the police, but we should not give it to the public, because then the police department might be embarrassed or upset, or it might damage the relationship between the board and the police department.
Can you give a couple of examples and then say what happened? Was that approach successful?
I think it was completely unsuccessful because it undermined undermined everything that the Police Review Board was about. Again, independence, openness, and accessibility were really the three key ideas behind the board. It undermined those. It undermined the whole responsibility that the board had held for the public. I mean, the public really said, great, now we have something in place. We're going to have access to information about what the police are doing, about police misconduct, about the results of complaints of misconduct. We're going to have more openness. This promoted the opposite of that. The first time it happened was during a closed meeting when the board discussed complaints and reviewed the police department's investigation of complaints. And board members agreed to make a series of recommendations.
This is where they found that the police chief Belcher was violating his own department's directive about he was required to forward all complaints to the CPRB but was not doing so, was instead...
This was much earlier than that.
Okay.
This was much earlier than that. It was just at a regular closed meeting where we were looking at complaints, investigations of a few complaints that had been filed, and then...
That's pretty much all you had, right? We're closed meetings, as I remember.
Yeah,
unfortunately. Other than once a month, you have your sort of public hearing.
Right.
Well, it wasn't a public hearing. It was a public meeting.
Yeah.
There were no, count them, no public hearings ever held on any complaints, even the most serious ones.
No, that's true.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, go ahead. So at this first...
Yeah, and at a particular meeting, it was early on in the history of the board. Board members agreed on a number of recommendations they would make to the police chief, and among them, the discussion touched on a recommendation that the board did not agree on, and in the end, the board agreed that it was a recommendation that it could make to the chief. In terms of changing some policy that the police department was carrying out, but it would be better not to make that policy suggestion public.
What was that policy suggestion?
I actually don't remember at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little strange. I'll look that up. I'll so next time I talk to you, I can.
But you say that generally, when this was done, that you feel that it did not have the hoped-for insider influence that I guess Kay Bowden hoped it would have?
Yeah, I think, no, it didn't. It didn't at all. I mean, in fact, that method really backfired clearly sometimes. For example, Kay was meeting, as I found out, I was surprised, actually, to find this out. She was meeting with the police chief regularly. And this wasn't something the board said, hey, that'd be a good idea if the chairperson met privately with the police chief.
Was she informing the board of her meeting?
No, it wasn't. She didn't come and say at the last meeting with the chief. Her perception of those meetings were they weren't meetings, they were lunches or casual get-togethers.
Maybe there was just a date. The two of them were planning some, never mind.
Well, they, you know, as it turns out, that's fine, you know, if that's her perception and it was interesting for her or she gathered more information about police and policing or whatever. The outcome, though, is factual, and what happened from one of those get-togethers with her and the police chief being there, no other board members, and not suggested by the board or condoned or even known about by the board, what occurred was the police chief came out of one of those meetings believing that he had the okay from Kay Bowden to make a finding in a complaint before he had the review of the investigation of that complaint from the police review board. I should explain, just to make it clear, technically once the board was created, the police chief would have to wait. The police chief made a final decision in the outcome of a complaint, and he would wait until he got the review of that investigation.
But it should be clarified for those listening that the only investigation that happened was through the police department's
right.
own IA department,
right.
which then the board sat on in closed session. And I guess on occasion they had the option to ask more questions.
Right.
I think they used to have an actual police officer inside those sessions or in the hallway nearby.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, that's another story, which is a great story.
You got to tell me about that.
Gia Grant, who also resigned from the board, I'm sure you know this, that she was concerned that a police officer was continuously at board public meetings,
mm-hmm.
as you know.
Yeah.
You know, there's a police officer. At first, it was the chief himself sitting up at the city council chambers with the police review board. And, you know, people were, I know a lot of people were uncomfortable with that. I was uncomfortable with that. In terms of this notion that the board is independent, one of the main functions of the board, or the main goals of the board. And other people reported that they were also uncomfortable. Citizens came to the board thinking, here's where I can go. I can go to a public meeting to say how I feel about the police and to offer criticism and to tell, to talk about their experiences with the police, and they didn't feel comfortable doing that with a police officer sitting up there.
Uniformed in many cases.
Uniformed, yeah, sometimes. And appearing as if they were a part of the board. And in fact, my goodness, Michael Hernandez, who served on that board.
And used it as a stepping stone to his city council job.
Yeah, you know, he once said at a public meeting that something to the effect of the police chief's on the board, too. The police chief's part of the board. And, you know, it's just not so. He's not. He's really not.
But it would have been what a casual observer might have assumed, looking at the fact that the police chief was sitting on that rotunda right up there with the board, right?
Yeah, and that was the problem. And what Gia had told me was that when she was on the board, she brought up this issue as a point to be discussed on the agenda at a public meeting. And what happened was that agenda item, when she showed up for that meeting, the agenda item had been changed or had been understood to mean, should we allow a police officer to be at our closed meetings from now on?
So instead of getting rid of the cop from the open meeting, they changed it to invite the cop into the closed meeting.
Yeah, and that's what happened. The board voted, did that, and they started doing that. And I think Gia was a little surprised by that.
Right. Well,
and I, as far as I know, the police officer is not at closed meetings anymore. That was
he's in the hallway, I think, available or something
is
like that.
Is nearby or available.
They have a police investigator. Again, this relying on the police department for expertise in these matters seems to me such a clear conflict of interest, unless you want to trust the IA department. And if you're going to trust them, what do you need a CPRB for anyway? It boggles the mind.
Yeah, it's not... if you want to have two different opinions, you need to allow those opinions to develop and form, and there isn't that possibility with the Police Review Board in Santa Cruz.
Well, what struck me is even in the most serious cases, like a police officer who shot down a poor man, Happy John Dine, again, November 12th is the memorial where we're going to have a forum on police brutality on that issue for any listeners who are interested. And by the way, let me just say that you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, and we're talking to former Citizens Police Review Board Commissioner John Malkin from San Francisco, hopefully soon to be a future commentator and program person on Free Radio Santa Cruz, as he has been before. The things that I was noticing about, you know, police review, about the this business of the even a serious matter like a shooting, and even when the city council in advance has indicated it will, for example, fund an independent investigator and provide for public hearings and allow for early investigation, all possibilities never used by this board in the last 4 years, still the board ignores these issues. And it shows, I suppose you could say it might show the quality of the people being appointed, or the lack of interest by the city council. What does it mean, John? I'm still a little bit... Is it an institutional problem within the board? Is it the fact that the chair, like Kay Bowden or Bill Christie, or now I guess the new chair is Lisa Rose, puts people in a situation where they feel they can't speak? I mean, you spoke up even though you were in the minority on the board.
Yeah, and it was really frustrating to do that. And I think... it's a variety of reasons why the board is like it is. I think there's some good people with good intentions on the board. I think when I was on the board, some of those people found it very, very difficult, and I can understand. They found it very difficult to speak out publicly, to be critical of the police publicly, and were genuinely afraid. I mean, it is kind of scary. The police kill people. That's what's happening. And then there are people who, you know, there are different ideas about how to do things politically, and some people really have the idea that the ends justify the means, and that, you know, make some deals in a way.
Keep a low profile.
Yeah, and
don't offend the chief. I keep hearing that phrase, the chief, until it makes me kind of sick.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's not my chief, and he's supposedly not the CPRB's chief, but yeah. You wouldn't know it by listening to these people talk.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a problem, you know, and also, again, the separation of the people and the government, and that is kind of inherent in government systems, unfortunately, I think. And
what about a community-based process of, I've talked to you about it as a tribunal, where people who are harassed by the police simply come to this tribunal, and then three people every week sit down and hear their complaints, and it's a public hearing. There's no secrecy. Mm-hmm. And I guess we've talked about that as an idea, but you've talked about a broader, more fundamental change where the whole policing process itself is reassumed by the community, right?
I think it would be a great thing. And this forum that occurred last Friday on October 30th in San Francisco, this man, Ali Bruce, who had attended the Million Youth March, said that they came up with, at that march in New York a month ago, they came up with a list of agenda items. And one of them was this, exactly this, to reassume the job that the police are not doing, or doing very violently, to create community groups that provide for security and provide for conflict resolution in communities, and to train people to do that. And, you know, the police are not doing their job is what they described, and they are trying to set up a way that the rest of us can do that. And I think it's a great idea. And it's something I have been thinking about for some time. To instead of ask the police continually to change how they're doing things and ask the government to change how they're doing things, and create a police review board that's going to do that, just do it. Just
stop whining and start
organizing. Organize people to be their own government, in a sense. Government now means that some people are governing over others and making decisions for others. If people organize themselves in neighborhood or community groups and train each other in techniques of nonviolent conflict resolution, which is pretty much the opposite of what the police are trained to do, and in a certain way, it's hard to blame police officers because we are paying for their training and implicitly approving of their training, which is a training in violence and how to solve conflicts using violence, and they are trained to raise the level of violence. And we can say, we'd rather you didn't do that anymore, and in fact, we're going to do it ourselves.
I think this is a great idea, and I think it needs institutional elaboration and brainstorming. I know that, for example, the next police brutality forum that I'm aware of is the Charles Vaughn forum coming up down in, it was posted on the wall here in the studio, but I don't see it at the moment. It's coming up within the next week or two down in Monterey. You know about the shooting of Charles Vaughn Sr.
Right.
on the roof in Seaside.
Yeah.
Love to have you find time to come down and speak at that and be a part of that. Or possibly, you know, to do. I'd love to see you resume your show, and maybe you think you're interested in again in taking as a priority a radical change in how the policing function happens in communities across the country.
I think it's really vital. I think maybe another half of that also is that is people need to take this to heart in their own day-to-day lives also. Police are called to incidents where there are very difficult situations occurring. People are being violent with each other, domestic situations, just situations with children. It's not as if we don't need help sometimes. And I think people can train each other. There's so many people in our communities with a wealth of knowledge from being in civil rights movements in this country that know and are continuing to develop their ideas about nonviolence. And those people can spread their knowledge and help people to act nonviolently in their own lives, and as a result, need less contact from the police. I think there will be less police misconduct if there's less police activity. Call the police less. Deal with your situations in a nonviolent manner. The police are called to situations that they themselves think are a pain in the ass. Going to domestic violence situations where people are hurting each other, people that live with each other. If people can take that responsibility back and not say, you know, I'm going to call the police and get the guns over here. Deal with the situation responsibly. Have someone else to call in your community besides the police. Who is there now that you can call if there's a violent situation or a potentially violent, frightening situation?
It's like that old right-wing bumper sticker of the 60s, when you're in trouble, try calling a hippie. Well, maybe people should set up institutions where you can try calling a different institution rather than the police department.
Yeah, I think it might be the other half to this. Because, you know, it's a fair argument to say, you know, someday you're going to wish the police were there.
Mm-hmm.
And there are situations where there is violence occurring and you do need help. That is true.
Mm-hmm.
But it'd be good to foment some change in how people generally are interacting with each other and, you know, promote the idea of nonviolence. All around us, the idea of violence is promoted. It is how our government responds to domestic problems, that's the police, and to international conflict, that's the military.
Mm-hmm.
And it'd be a good idea to really embrace a more positive way of resolving problems.
And I think this idea has probably come up in the past, and people have begun to work on it in different times and different places, and that we can gain to some extent some historical understanding and maybe some get some benefit from looking back where it has been brought up.
Mm-hmm.
Boy.
And yeah, I think you're right. I think to look at the history of it is really important, because right now in schools and otherwise, history is the history of violence and war, and we learn the dates and times of victories and defeats of violent interactions. And there's an equal and maybe greater history of people resolving problems without using violence. And there's a whole history of kindness and non-resistance and passive resistance and, you know, long even before Gandhi really honed in on it and practiced it. And then since then, too, there's really a huge...
Well, the civil rights struggle in the United States is I mean, there is controversy about it. I mean, there were armed... I tend to also favor the right of citizens to arm themselves,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I favor that right as well. But, you know, the massive changes that happened through people following the lead of Reverend Shuttlesworth and Rosa Mae Parks and Martin Luther King and all these people, many of whom we don't know too much about because you just get a couple of the big names, you know, working
yep.
day after day, challenging violence with nonviolence.
Yeah.
You know, and it has been successful.
Yeah.
It's also failed, I imagine, in other places too, but
yeah.
needs to be tried.
Yeah. I mean, the experiment with violence, you have to look at it and say, has it succeeded or failed also?
Mm-hmm.
You know, at times, experiments with nonviolence have not worked. But the experiment with violence is a failure. That is clear to anyone. That has to be clear to everyone. Bosnia and East Timor, Cambodia, Vietnam, Guatemala, Chile, South Central Los Angeles, slaves brought here to the United States, the killing of Native Americans here. It's a experiment with that way of dealing with people, and it's a violent method, and it's failed.
You know, I'm hoping that in a subsequent show, if you're willing to come on again, we can talk. What do you say to revolutionaries who are facing armed repressive authorities who are
yeah.
you know like the Albanians in Kosovo?
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
What do we say to those people whose children are being shot?
It's a great question. It's a very important question, and I'd be happy to talk to you about it. I'm gonna take off. I appreciate talking to you. I want to announce one thing, a San Francisco event, because that's where I am now.
Sure.
November 7th, next Saturday at 1 p.m. at the Federal Building. It's a event in support of Mumia Abu-Jamal. As everyone knows by now, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court has ruled against Mumia and has thrown out his appeal. This is an emergency protest. There was one yesterday in San Francisco.
How did that go, do you know?
I wasn't able to attend. Unfortunately, I really got sick yesterday with the flu.
Mm-hmm. And you're still feeling a little under the weather.
Yeah, I'm not feeling great, but hopefully I can make this event next Saturday, and I hope people are planning things in Santa Cruz or can come up for this event in San Francisco next Saturday at 1 o'clock at the Federal Building.
Mm-hmm. John Malkin, thank you very much for spending this last hour with us, and I hope that this isn't going to be the last time that you show up on this show.
No, and I hope I have a show soon of my own to discuss these ideas and play unusual and wonderful music.
Hey, the sooner the better.
Yeah. Have a good afternoon there.
Thanks, John. You
okay.
too.
And that was former Citizens Police Review Commissioner John Malkin calling long distance on his dime, I might add, from San Francisco, where he now lives. Phone lines are now open. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3, and our phone number is 427-3772. That's our in-studio live line, and it looks like the phone is lighting up.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Well, hello there. How you doing?
Hey, sounds like another our local cop watcher, Skidmark Bob.
Yeah, I was going to give you a little report of the Halloween thing last night with all the police since I was there.
Oh, good. Give me the story.
There was massive amounts of police on Pacific Garden Mall all night, arresting who they appeared to think who was drunk, this and that. There, at one point, they had arrested 20 people for mostly drunk in public.
You mean in one place, or this is one after another?
Oh, the one after another.
And at when did you start your cop watch patrol, so to speak?
Oh, earlier, like about 6, 7 o'clock.
Because when I was on the mall between 6 and 7, I only saw two officers. They were kind of looked like new cops, and they were leaving the people at Hippie Planter alone, at Lincoln and Pacific.
So they have something to do.
Right. Good point, yes.
The one thing I did notice, though, was the drum circles that were shut down. There was one in front of the Palomar that was so huge that people were going out into the street. There was one of just a few couple of people that were that was over by the where the farmer's market is, were just hanging out, drumming. They're shut down and cited.
Cited,
yeah. I think one was an open container. I think that's what they were cited for. But Sergeant, what's his name? Sanders.
Sanders.
Said that there was a complaint, but the actual complaint was the one in front of the Palomar. Which
now, was this late at night at beyond 10 o'clock?
This is around 9 o'clock. So, and they went and just walked right in the middle of the drum circle and busted it up and stopped it. There was another drum circle happening that they stopped. I can't remember quite where the heck that one was. But, in front of New Leaf Market, where they got into a long argument with one of the drummers there, threatened to arrest him. And then Sergeant Sanders, I smell alcohol, and he was not drunk, and he did not drink any alcohol. He doesn't drink alcohol.
Were you a witness to this interaction?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was a witness. I watched the whole thing. There were six police officers there blocking the sidewalk, telling people that they were blocking the sidewalk. And I find it funny that the Catalyst, having their big costume ball, can have plenty of people walking around out in the middle of the street. People have to, in order to walk around the Catalyst, you have to walk out into the street and around it. And I find three officers standing in the middle of the sidewalk, or middle of the street, watching this whole thing, when, of course, these drum circles can't have those going on. They have to shut those down immediately, but they allow the Catalyst and the Blue Lagoon, and there's a couple other establishments.
Well, alcohol is healthier than drum music. You should know that by now.
Of course. They allow them to go ahead and block the sidewalk because, of course, they're a business and they're making money. But when it comes to free expression and counterculture people drumming and trying to have a good time in the street, which everybody was having a good time, they come in and bust those up right away.
Was there much resistance to the police action of busting the stuff up?
The one in front of New Leaf, there was quite a bit of resistance. People were very upset about it. He called in for reinforcements at one point, so they had like 6 to 10 officers. Actually, 6 officers were on foot there, and then there were like 3 patrol cars kind of roving around. They all had their riot gear as well. One person witnessed the police bringing their riot gear into the downtown information center. Very long, like 4-foot riot sticks, and I'm sure all their helmets and gear were inside these big bags full of stuff that said police on the side. I have to give out one thanks or praise to Officer Stan, who this woman evidently was having some kind of emotional breakdown, and they said she was 5150 at one point, and
which means, of course, she'll be taken away on a psychiatric hold.
Well, see, they're too busy to deal with that. They would have to take her all the way to the Dominican. But what he did instead was found out that she had left her meds at home. And he ran to stop the 35 bus, yelled at the bus. The bus was stopped, and she got on and was able to make it home to her meds. So I thought...
Good for Officer Stan.
That was kind of nice.
I hope you file a commendation at the CPR. Actually, you don't have to do it at the CPRB. Call the cops. And you write a note for Stan. That goes in his file. I do that occasionally when police officers surprised me with that consideration or unusual assistance.
There was one stabbing at the Metro where a Latino man was stabbed by another. I don't know if it was gang-related or whatever, but a gentleman was stabbed in the stomach. He didn't die or anything. He was okay. He just had a small incision, I guess. And they called out Sergeant Seeley to investigate it, and other officers were there as well. No one was arrested in that incident because they didn't know who it was. I think there was one person arrested that they thought was the suspect, but I don't know what happened, whatever became of that. But basically, that's what happened. They just roamed around. Anybody who was a little extra loud, I noticed, they stopped and see if they're drunk, and sometimes they just arrested them. They've done that on the first night, which I find, why don't they do the same thing for Halloween, close off the streets and just open up the downtown street to, you know.
Excellent idea.
Yeah, it's like, rather than that, then having to break up all these, you know, drum circles and things. But of course, first night, you get to rent a spot from the DTA, so the DTA makes their fucking money.
Mm-hmm.
Here, you can't just, you know, go out there and express yourself and have other people get involved in it without the DTA making some kind of buck.
Well, it's kind of ironic. The DTA has been complaining that, you know, they can't get enough people to come downtown, and the businesses are failing and all this stuff, or they're just barely making it, or they're not making it fast enough. And what they need, of course, are things to draw larger groups of people downtown. Everyone agrees on that.
Mm-hmm.
And yet such an obvious thing as closing off the street, I think they should do it twice a month at least.
Mm-hmm.
And have large fiestas and celebrations as San Francisco neighborhoods do.
Right.
You know, and it would be productive. It would draw people to town. I think, but it would have to be for me and for my, you know, my dollars, so to speak, mixed with a new assertion, hopefully by our new progressive city council majority when it comes into power, if it comes into power on Tuesday. Actually, it comes into power at the end of the month when it comes into power. But it would have to be with their agreeing that this doesn't just include commercial activities, but includes an acknowledgement that there are a lot of people who are engaging in non-commercial activity downtown who equally need to be given protection from police department harassment, merchant vindictiveness,
mm-hmm.
and similar kinds of, you know, merchants, I guess, tend to feel they own the sidewalks these days, and I think that attitude has to be changed. There has to be an awareness that we all share in this public space.
Well, that's the whole thing with the recent sightings of the hacky sackers by Officer Headley, and also free radio tabling, any kind of counterculture or different type of, you know, a little bit different from the DTA's plans or Officer Headley's plans, usually gets some kind of citation.
Mm-hmm.
When other people can go ahead and do the same things in front of Zachary's, for instance, every Saturday morning, they block the sidewalk, coffee roasting, you know, almost every night people are out there hanging out doing the same thing these hacky sackers are doing over, and because they're a little bit countercultural people and they're not exactly spending money at like these other establishments, they don't get hassled. I've even made complaints. I've called the police and had them come down to Zachary's and told them that they need to cite people for this, and they just drive by and clear the call. And sometimes they don't even drive by, they just clear the call, and then that's about it. They, you know, say, oh, it's just Zachary's, you know, and there's people all out in the streets in the center divider waiting for a table at Zachary's, and the police just let it go because it's money, money, money. That's all it's about.
Selective enforcement is the name of the game here, and so what we need, obviously, is protection for different, widely varying different groups of people, and I'm sure we'll have that when Fitzmaurice, Crone, and Sugar come romping into office, or will we? That's
well,
a good question.
I don't know. Yeah. I have my doubts, but anyway, that's a report from the Halloween.
Hey,
downtown Santa
and this is our chief goblin cop watcher, Skidmark Bob.
Okay.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
Yeah, you can, you too can be like Skidmark Bob. You don't have to have a radio show and a fancy name to keep your eye on what's going on downtown. Matter of fact, I wrote up a flyer about this yesterday. I'm going to read it now, and before I zip into the music, actually I think I'll zip into the music first and then read it. We've been doing a little too much talking and not enough humming. So here's something from Jekyll and Hyde, which is a musical that you've probably never heard of before. It hasn't shown up in movie form, but perhaps it should. It's got a song about evil.
from good. Evil does well, good not so good. Evil's the one that is free everywhere, good is the one that they sell. You must decide which is heaven, which is hell. Good men maintain evil's a
curse,
but it is plain good, even worse. Evil's the one that they tell you to shun, good is the one to embrace. Say that and Satan will laugh right in your face. A prayer, good is commendable, evil is dependable, evil is viable, good's unreliable, good may be thankable, evil is bankable.
Dial 911. It's a hacky sack game. Latest flyer from my prolific pen. Police target poor on Pacific Avenue. Cops corner free food servers, homeless newspapers, free radio fundraisers, and hacky sackers downtown. Early in September, officers Headley and Eveleth prompted public speeches of protest at City Council by their lengthy pursuit, harassment, ticketing, and jailing of a group of out-of-town Rainbow Family food servers on Pacific Avenue. The two eager cops jailed a young woman for inadequate ID, jailed a young man for displaying merchandise, and repeatedly hassled and moved along their companions. In late September, Headley and Officer Eveleth seized homeless newspapers from street spirit vendor Anthony Douglas. Police Chief Steve Belcher personally apologized for the seizure and dismissed the accompanying ticket. Eveleth himself is notorious for harassing Feed the People food servers and giving out foot on the cement lip of a planter box tickets. On Sunday, October 11th, Headley gave Free Radio Santa Cruz fundraisers Sarah and Justin $162 citations for giving out Free Radio Santa Cruz t-shirts in return for donations. Eveleth lost a previous such case in court against FRSC broadcaster Vinny for displaying. Without giving Miranda right to silence warnings, Headley engaged Sarah in a long dialogue, finally eliciting what he regarded as an incriminating statement. Then he dropped the friendly cop facade, pulled out his ticket book. This happened less than 3 weeks after Belcher's apology letter to street spirit vendor Douglas. On the evenings of October 26th through 28th, officers Headley and Bayani zeroed in on hacky sackers at the large plaza-like sidewalk area at Pacific and Lincoln Streets. The two drew angry crowds as they gave out obstructing the sidewalk tickets to largely homeless young and long-haired group, five on the 26th and six on the 28th of October. Some of these are also being driven from their out-of-sight sleeping spots on the outskirts as the city and other police sweeps against the poor continue. What can you do to halt the war on the poor? Well, pick three. Stop, watch, and comment on questionable police stops. You have a right to watch and listen. Raise your voice on the scene to inform others and attract observers. Draw a crowd. If innocent behavior by a poor person, such as sitting on the sidewalk, is being singled out, join the victim and encourage others to do so by sitting down next to her or him. Solidarity discourages harassment. File a complaint. You need not be a direct victim or even a witness. Just cite what facts as you understand them with approximate time and place. At to the Citizens Police Review Board, which we know is toothless but still keeps records, at 429-3262. Demand that board send observers down to Pacific Avenue, take complaints on the scene, and issue a policy statement against harassment as Berkeley's Police Review Commission did in August against a similar campaign directed against young people on Telegraph Avenue. Call City Council to rein in Belcher's board blue shirts. It's got a 24-hour line, 429-3550. Join activists to find real solutions to police misconduct, such as cop watch patrols on the streets or a community forum. Regular, independent, and open community process to take complaints, publicly review them at public hearings, and provide a regular forum to expose abuses. Call 423-HUFF. That's 423-4833 to volunteer. Ask those progressive city council candidates to make good on their campaign promises. Chris Crone, 423-1066. Keith Sugar, 462-2053. Tim Fitzmaurice, 423-1167. Pat Clark, 469-0913. Come down and observe their police department in action. Ask them to move immediately to review the downtown ordinances, conduct on public property ordinances, and other laws the police use to roust and remove poor and homeless people. Call the Sentinel, 423-4242, and the Mercury News, 423-3234, and suggest they...